This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm.
Welcome to this episode of Fairways and Greens. I'm your host, Gaylord Rhodes, the Vegas golf coach. And after 30 years as a golf professional, teacher, and coach, I decided it was time to share the knowledge and insights into the world of golf that I have gathered during my career as a golf professional. And joining me each episode will be a special guest from the golf industry. Together we will discuss and share their insights, expertise, knowledge, and stories from their career and life in golf as well. Hope you enjoy this episode, and as always, I welcome and appreciate your input and suggestions for future shows, as well as your questions. So feel free to reach out and get in touch with me, the Vegas Golf Coach, by emailing me at info@golfcoachpodcast.com. That's info@golfcoachpodcast.com. Reach out and let us know what's on your mind and what you're thinking about. So let's get started with today's show. Well, I want to welcome in today's Fairway and Green show a good friend, an old school, real old school teacher who many, many years ago in the 1970s got out of college and had a dream to be a golf professional. His story is amazing. Just want to share it to you all. And just it's just an example of if you've got a dream big enough and you stay focused on it and stay determined, anything can happen. And this is a guy who went from no background in golf, not even the ability to really play that well, and ended up shooting a video, an info commercial in the 90s. It was on the Golf Channel, got involved with Amy Grant, and just did some amazing things. The Vickers family at Castle Pines, spent some time at Torrey Pines, Castle Pines, and was off in the Chuck Hogan Golf Schools for a while, ended up at PGA National, was mentored by Dr. Tomasi when he had spent his time. I mean, just an amazing journey this man's had, and I just want him to sit back, and we're going to have Mike just kind of share his journey through golf. It's an amazing journey. Mike, welcome to the show. I know you've had some health issues as we all get older here, and I'm just glad that you're healthy today, and we're talking, and I look forward to our relationship. As you know, I think we're going to do some golf schools together here in the future. I look forward to that. So, Mike, how are you this morning, and welcome.
Today I'm doing quite well, thank you, and I really I'm enjoying getting to visit with you because I've had a wonderful career, and it's highly unlikely that anyone else will have the same career. But I'm just so blessed to have been part of the best game in the world and having met some of the best people in the world.
I agree, Mike. It's just a small world in golf too, as you know. We've crossed, probably walked right in front of each other multiple times over the last 30 years, and it was nice to officially finally meet you. So let's get started with your story, Mike. I mean, here you are, you're up in Denver, you go to college, and you get a degree in journalism. How the heck did you get into golf?
Okay, now I'm gonna just kind of tell you my life story, because looking back, I just find it fascinating myself. I happen to have been there and had a front row seat watching it happen. But I was a guy that came out of college. I had a degree in journalism, got a job in journalism, didn't like it, and then I saw an ad for Golf Digest, I think it said, become a golf pro, become a club professional. I go, wow, what's that? I read up about it. And I said, that's what I want to do. So I had to get my foot in the door in the industry. And I didn't have any credentials. I played high school golf. And I was a good high school player. I was an outstanding senior golfer along with the other three members of the team. So those were my golf credentials. Nothing. I saw an ad for a clerk at Foothills Golf Course in Denver, which is the busiest golf facility in Colorado. And so I went in to apply for this clerk job, and the boss said, Bill Ramsey, super guy, but he said, I'm sorry, I just filled that job with a really good-looking woman. And back then, we could do that. Nowadays, that's tougher to do.
Yeah.
But I said, well, that's great. I'd love to be around this beautiful woman. What can I do to be here? And he goes, well, what I really need is a golf teacher. I go, that's me. That's the job I really wanted. He goes, wow, great. He said, are you any good? Yeah, 2 handicap. Pretty good. Well, I hadn't played in 4 years. He said, all right, your first group lesson is Monday at 4 p.m. We'll see you then. All right. I said, do you have a particular textbook you guys like to use in your teaching? He said, what do you mean, textbook? Nah. just standard golf instruction.
Yeah.
No textbook. I said, I know. I just thought you might have a preference. He said, I'll see you Monday. So I found, on the way out, I found a dozen Hogan balls that came with Ben Hogan's 5 Lessons, The Fundamentals of Modern Golf. And I didn't know really who Hogan was or what the fundamentals of golf were. So I said, well, that's as good as any. Turns out it's one of the best.
Yes. Wasn't a bad way to start.
Friday, yeah. I spent Friday, Saturday, and Sunday trying to memorize the Hogan golf book. And, you know, you might be able to read it and memorize it in 3 days, but it's going to take you 30 years to understand it and live it.
I agree.
I didn't know that. So I went out and, started teaching. And I remember Bill Ramsey asked my first group after my first lesson, he said, how Mike do? Is he a good teacher? Oh, man, he knows a lot about golf. He probably went on 40 minutes. Just talking. Did you guys ever get a hit of ball? Oh, we hit some putts. I've always been a talker.
Yep.
And at that time, you could kind of make it up as you went along because people didn't read golf books.
Yeah, there just wasn't that much stuff out there. I mean, there was nothing to compare it to.
Whatever I told them, they'd believe me.
Yeah, I know.
And some of them, despite me, became really good players. So I've learned that, you know, being a teacher, it's never about you. Nobody has ever asked who Einstein's best physics teacher was. Nobody cared. So I had to get over myself a little. But I thought, okay, now, I'm teaching in Denver, Colorado. I told my boss, I said, I want to be the busiest golf pro in Denver. And he said, all right, then you've got to be the cheapest. I said, why? And he says, because you don't know crap of what you're talking about.
that's funny.
But within a year, I was probably the busiest golf instructor in Denver. I was probably the cheapest and probably the worst. But you learn to teach by teaching.
Exactly.
And I gave so many lessons in that hot Colorado sun. And I learned what I didn't know.
Exactly.
And that built volumes.
To parallel you, I was the same way. I mean, I was in the PGA, and I, you know, I was offered the inside pro shop, kind of training me to become a head pro. And I really didn't want to. The industry was changing. I didn't really want to sit behind the desk. I wanted to go out and play and teach. And so I convinced Orrin Vincent at OB Sports to let me do that. And instead of spending my time as an apprentice in the shop, I got to run outside services at Angel Park here in town and teach. And I was doing 10 lessons a day, 4 or 5 days a week. And, you know, it was only $35 a lesson. And I think I was making 20 or 25. But, you know, I got involved with Henry Griffiths. I met Randy Henry. I got mentored by this incredible group of and we just learned as we went. And we just surrounded ourselves, and I know I'm going to get off here and let you tell about all the amazing people you ran into that you got mentored with. So here you are. You're the most busiest teacher in Denver, and then it gets cold in the winter. So what'd you do in the winter?
Well, the first year I started teaching golf at Foothills Golf Course, and the snow started flying in the fall. I said, what do we do all winter? I go, we come in every day and dust and do shoe inventory and, plan next year's tournament calendar, you know, that kind of stuff. I go, oh, sounds horrible. I'm going to San Diego. And the boss goes, what are you going to do out there? I said, swim, surf, teach golf. I did a pro job out there. And they all laughed at me. And I went out, and a week later, I was working at Stardust Country Club, and later would, move in there in Southern California to Torrey Pines, which were both wonderful. And, I didn't have any golf credentials. I was an assistant pro, an apprentice, and certainly not experienced enough for anybody to want me if they really knew what my background was. So I had to fudge a little, and I've kind of done it ever since. But somewhere along the line, I became a pretty good golf teacher, and it was not through any planning of mine, not through any brilliant intelligence. It's just out there for thousands of hours, and I got to be with people a lot smarter than I was. And so, I think we don't steal from each other, but we learn from each other. And so when I teach, it's usually a repetition of something that was taught to me, but in fairness to myself, I give credit every time that I use someone else's tip. I had fun, and that was kind of my motivating factor. Where can I go have the most fun in the United States? So I made Denver my kind of travel hub, and I go from Denver to different places, come back in the summer, go, come back, go, come back. And so, I've been able to be in Torrey Pines in San Diego, Stardust in San Diego, Castle Pines here in Colorado, PJ National in Florida. That's where I was, did a little teaching in Vegas, actually. And, met Chuck Hogan and Arnold Palmer and Jack Nicklaus and Lee Trevino and all those guys. How's that for name dropping?
There you go. There you go. So, interestingly enough, back in those days, in the winter climate areas, a lot of the pros had summer jobs elsewhere. And so I think one of the funny stories is how you got the job at Torrey Pines when the cart went over the cliff. That was, tell that story. I think I already should like
that. Let me tell you, I'm embarrassed to tell it, but it is a good story, and it's true, and it's funny. And it has made a huge impact in my career and life. Once you get a Torrey Pines on your resume, whatever you did there, I did carts and kind of secretly caught in the corner of the range. But I learned the value of name dropping. And I really wanted to work at Torrey Pines to get that on my resume. So I went out there with a friend, and I took my shiny new resume, and I tried to give it to the pro, crusty old guy named Willie Wanza. Played in the 1934 U.S. Open, German background and a tough guy. He refused to accept my resume. I said, I'm going to leave it here, and then I want you to look at it. So I handed it to him, he watered it up, threw it in the trash can. Well, we went out and played golf, my buddy and I, and on the north course, there's a par 3 beautiful hole. I think it's number 7. They go down off the cliffs.
Pretty famous hole.
Yeah, beautiful. And there's a foursome of chubby, I think they're insurance salesmen. It had all the golf clothes and tour bags and, about 48 beers in a cooler. And they went up to the parking area at the top of this number 7 tee box and forgot to set the hill brake. And that cart just rocketed down that hill towards the cliffs and flew over the cliff. And this guy goes, dang!
And these guys quietly snuck off the golf course.
It was like John Belushi in Animal House, where he's kind of jumping around, thinking nobody can see him. That's what these guys were doing. They crawled down there and they got their beer cooler and climbed it back up the cliff and took off to the parking lot. I went and looked over the cliff. You could just see a shiny bumper through this mass of vegetation. If you didn't know where to look, you'd never find it. We went in, finished round, went in, had a couple beers, and it started to get dark. And Willie's on the intercom yelling at the cart guys, "I want that last cart in so we can go home. I'm not going to pay you guys to sit around all night waiting for one golf cart. I'll get it myself. You guys go home. I go, wow, he's really ticked off. So I go and I said, Mr. Wanza, I know where that cart is. He goes, where? You know, I don't want to tell you. Where is it? I said, you know, if I worked here and you were my boss, I'd have to tell you. But since I don't work here, I don't really give a rat. But, and he said, all right, you've leveraged yourself a job. You'd be here at 4:30 in the morning pulling carts out. So we went out in the dark with floodlights and shined it over the hill, and you could see the bumper, and he got a chain and some guys and pulled the cart up. And so that's how I got into Torrey Pines. There was no qualifying, no shooting golf or anything.
Conned your way in. I love it. I love it.
Just so, luck. Pure luck.
Yeah. So you got that on your resume, and you go back up, about this time, were you at Castle Pines when you went back up for the summer?
Oh, let's see.
You were foothills in the beginning, and then you were...
Foothills in Denver. Then in the winter, I went to Stardust in San Diego, then back to Colorado to Applewood Golf Course.
Applewood, that's right.
I had one of my best mentors there, a guy named Larry Root, super guy. He's passed since then, but, man, got nothing but love for him. So I'd be at Applewood in the summers, and then I kept going to San Diego because it was like a land of swimming pools and movie stars.
Yep.
Cement pond. I mean, I was a hillbilly out there, you know, walking around Torrey Pines, you know, shaking hands with Tom Watson and Ray Floyd and Lee Trevino like I owned the place. Yeah. Well, I didn't. I was a cart guy.
Tournament was always in the winter there, too. So, I mean, you were there every time it's called the Farmers now, but was it the Williams?
Yeah, it was the Andy Williams, yeah. San Diego.
Yeah, it was the Andy Williams back then.
Well, what a show they put on, too. I mean, Torrey Pines is a hard golf course.
It is.
Particularly
the South.
If I shot 74 out there when I was 22 years old, I thought I'd really done something. I said, watch when these tour pros come down here and see what a real golf course is all about.
Well, and this is about
64.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy. And it was like, you know, I used to think I was a pretty good player, too, and I had aspirations. And I went to college with Kite and Crenshaw, and I really wasn't playing that much golf then. I did take some lessons from Harvey, but it really isn't a priority for me.
Harvey Fennick?
Yeah. Yeah, right there. Austin.
I played 9 holes. I played 18 holes in the park.
Yeah, it's a small world, guy. But Harvey was at the Austin Country Club, which is now a municipal golf course in Austin, which they've redone it finally, and it's just a great. I mean, Hogan said there was a couple holes that Hogan said were some of the best holes in Texas, and we used to go out and play it, but I used to go there and take lessons. But I realized by watching Kite and Crenshaw that I didn't have the game to play with these guys. And yet, you know, you always think you do. And so it was a funny story. I mean, it was like everybody said, why don't you go out on the tour? And did you ever play the tour? And I went, you know what? I had an opportunity to see some of the best amateurs in the world when I really wasn't serious about golf. And I realized there's no way. And I used to use the analogy. It would be like comparing me, a horse that pulls the milk cart to a thoroughbred. It's just like... You know, you just don't. I don't think people understand how tough it is. And I had a guest on, Mike Gillian, early on in the show that talked about his journey of trying to make it on the tour. And he was a pretty good little amateur player. And it's just a whole different ball game. So, but back to your story. So now you're starting to teach. And obviously up in Denver, you were getting most of your teaching stuff done there. From Torrey Pines and from summering in San Diego, how'd you end up in the Phoenix area? And I know you created, tell them about your International Golf Academy and how all that came about.
Well, I still have to laugh at how pompous I was at age 24. You know, I'd wear the pink Izod shirt with the collar up and shades and nasty old Sansibelt slacks, double mitts.
The rage in the 70s.
Yeah, you know, and I was acting like a golf pro. It's like Chuck Hogan, who we both have done some work with, awesome guy. He called it fake it till you make it.
Yeah.
So I'd look around at what other golf pros did, and I'd act like them. And even the way a teacher poses when he leans back and crosses his arms and holds his hand up to check swing plane.
Exactly.
I did all. And then by doing that every day, all day, I eventually became a real golf pro. I started out as a charlatan and ended up, despite myself, becoming a pretty good teacher.
So we get now you're at Castle Pines, which is obvious.
Oh, you asked about how I got to Phoenix.
Yeah. And then and that's how you got to Phoenix, right?
Well, yeah. Sort
through
of,
the Vickers family.
I was working at Torrey Pines. And from there, I got the head professional job at Grand Doty Golf Club in Colorado at the base of the Sangre de Cristo Mountains. And I met Penny Zavikas, who owned a golf school along with Linda Kraft, the Kraft Zavikas Golf School.
Gotcha. And very famous.
Super women. They're both Hall of Famers.
Yeah.
They brought me out to Phoenix to be one of their staff instructors, not knowing that I was a very experienced. But what do I get? I get to learn from Penny Zavikas and Linda Kraft, and I mean, they're the best there are. And so I'm like a sponge, I'm soaking it in. And they were very kind, and they did help me along. And while I was in Phoenix, I said, boy, I think I ought to be able to do this on my own out here. And so I did. And that was the next stage. I was, Foothills, Applewood in Colorado, Grand Doty in Colorado, Castle Pine. But I was moving always what I think you would consider upward steps. And I don't mean to demean the municipals I worked at. Some of the best people and smartest people worked there and taught me. But from a career standpoint, I started to stair step and put things on the resume.
Yes.
Torrey Pines became Castle Pines, became a guest at PGA National to, so many places that I could never have gone without being in the business. I mean, beautiful place. I saw niceties at these places that I didn't even know existed.
So you always, you're down, you've got the chance to work with Kraft, and so you decide to do your own thing, and you end up in Phoenix, coming from Castle Pines and knowing the Vickers had a golf management company, as I understand. And I know
right.
Because when I first broke in the business, they were building Angel Park here in Las Vegas, and I went to work for their company. And small world, isn't it? And they made it about 3 years here in Vegas, and they dropped the contract with the city, and then OB Sports came in, and that's a whole nother story. But Gary Vickers was down here, and I was working directly with Gary in the early, when we were building the place. And so they've got this golf course down in the Phoenix area. I believe they had the pavilion, and I remember that. We're starting to get in now, we're starting a time frame together. So you go down there and you open up your Wine International Golf Academy. And and so
now, what a name that was.
Yeah, so meeting the Vickers at Castle Pine opened the door to your stay down at the pavilion. And you opened this Wine International Golf School. Tell a little bit. So, and again, that's your little egotistical run there, but, you know.
I'm embarrassed to tell the story, but I wanted to be world famous. I wanted to be Bob Toski or David Ledbetter. I didn't have the credentials for it, the knowledge for it. I didn't know how to do it. I just knew that's what I wanted. So I named my school, which wasn't a school, it was me and one student once in a while, the Wine International Golf Academy. And they said, what's that mean? I teach in Colorado. Every 10 years, I go to Japan. That was it. So we did, again, trying to get famous, I called a press conference about the grand opening of the Mike Wine Golf Academy, now in Scottsdale, Arizona. All proud and excited. And so I had all these media guys there that were eating free donuts and drinking free beers like they do. And among that crowd was Dr. T.J. Tomasi, who at the time was editor of Golf Illustrated magazine. And I gave a presentation of what I teach at the school and what my thoughts were about it and the future of the Wine International Golf Academy. So everybody jotted down a couple notes and left, except for Dr. Tomasi. He sat there in his $4 plastic chair and he said, "So, Mike, yes, sir. You're really just up there winging it, aren't you?" I go, "What do you mean, winging it?" "You have no idea where you're going with your next sentence." Yeah, sort of. "You're just making this crap up?"
Kind of like your whole career.
"You're making it up?"
Yeah.
"Are you making it up?" I said, "Yeah." I said, "I had to. Nobody else would teach it to me. There weren't any books. When I say something, never let your left wrist cup when chipping, you know, it was God's truth because I just made it up. I read it. I wrote it down and I read it."
Yeah.
And he said, "Mike, you listed some pretty lofty goals, but you don't have any stair steps to get there." And he said, "If you don't mind, I'll co-teach a couple schools with you and see if I can help you organize your thinking and your teaching." And at that point, I had to change from being a charlatan to being a true professional.
And I want my audience to know, Mike, that Dr. T.J. Tomasi was the editor, I believe, of Golf Illustrated magazine, and was pretty famous. And here's this guy with this kind of a reputation that suddenly just takes you under his wing. And so I just, you know, to me, I listened to your story, Mike, and it's just amazing, you know, all the different people that you bumped into that led you to the next step and the next step, and the Vickers family at Castle Pines and building a resume at Torrey Pines. And then here you are, and you're finally out trying to do something on your own after working with the craft schools. And here comes Dr. TJ. I mean, how do you think the universe doesn't take care of people? Tell you that my stories too. I mean, just the mentors that wander into our life when we have a dream and a passion and we're focused on what we want to do. And I just want my audience to know that, you know, anything's possible. If the belief is big enough, you can achieve it. And so here's Dr. Tomasi, and he starts working with you and gets you organized and kind of lead the story on from, you know, after you meet, I think, the biggest part of your career occurred after that. And kind of with mine, meeting Randy Henry and getting involved with the family at Henry Griffiths and pioneering club fitting. And we all go through these stages that lead us to these incredible opportunities.
Right. So your achievement I have gotten in golf was not really my own. I was lifted and buoyed by people everywhere I went. Because you can't just walk onto a driving range at PGA National and start teaching golf.
No.
You got to understand what Mike Adams is trying to do out there.
Yeah.
Dr. Tomasi is there. A bunch of top 100 golf teachers are there.
Exactly.
And I'm again this guy where people are looking around and going, "Who's that guy?"
Mm-hmm.
Well, at the time, I was nobody. I'm still nobody. But for a while, I thought I was somebody. But Tomasi, I was just winging it, like you said. He taught me to structure things a little bit. And that's kind of how I ended up doing 3 seconds to better golf. I had to sit down and write it out and, you know, depict scenes and voiceovers and all that stuff. I couldn't just wing it. And so Tomasi helped me learn that end of it. And
you're in Phoenix and TJ comes in and starts working with your schools, helps you get organized, starts to mentor you. And from Phoenix, what was your next step? I mean, I know you ended up in Florida, and that's where you met the Grant family, Amy's, you know, the famous singer, and got your video out on TV. So we're going to get to that. But Give us a couple of give us the process of you going from work originally working with TJ to going through Alabama into Florida.
Right. You know, TJ was teaching with Chuck Hogan.
Very good friend.
Chuck is a brilliant guy.
Yes.
He is brilliant. And, you know, I was learning things about how practice changes the molecular structure of the brain, and you have neurological pathways.
Yes.
And dendrite chains and things I'd never heard of.
Well, Chuck was so big on neurolinguistic programming and how to identify the teaching styles. And he once told me, if you don't have a boombox on your driving range, you're going to miss all the auditory learners in the world. And, you know, he was so far ahead of everybody. And I was fortunate enough, like as you were, to get a chance to work with Chuck. And I don't know if I can reach out and actually get Chuck, but I'd love to have him on the show, and that's for another day. But I'd love to get it. I kind of know how to get to him, but I just don't know if he's interested or what his health's like anymore. So, but he mentored.
I don't know.
You were there.
Kind of like me.
We were there at the same time when Chuck was just finished his Aim to Win video, and, you know, Al Geiberger swinging over and over. It was like cybergenics. I mean, he was so far ahead.
Oh, remember that? That was great. Let Al Geiberger do the practice for you.
You
sit down and have a beer and watch it on TV. And through osmosis, you're going to go out and shoot 72.
Before every tournament I played that year, I believe it was 1990, 91 when I got a chance to spend all that time with Chuck, and I got his videos, and I used to put the CyberVision on and watch it right before I fell asleep. And then he had the cassette tapes you listened to in the car, and I just
that's
played
pretty cool.
I played some of my best golf ever just visualizing Al's swing and rhythm and tempo when I went out to play in tournaments. And in the chapter, it was so interesting. And so, and Chuck and so Chuck had golf schools at the time. He had one in Sedona, and we worked in Phoenix. I know we were there at the same time because Lynn, Marriott, and Pia were there, and Henry was there, and I was there, and Chuck, Chris Aoki, who I'll have on the show in the future, the putter sensei, who we went on to develop Henry Griffith's putter fitting system off of Chuck's work. Dave Adele got involved with us with milling our clubs, and, you know, Dave is now real famous with his putting and having worked with DeChambeau. And so you just see it's just a small world in golf. And so, Tomasi, you guys went out to Birmingham to one of Chuck's schools for a little while. Did you actually work that school in Birmingham, or did you just were for very long? Or?
Well, I think I made it probably about 6 months. And I worked for a gentleman named Billy McDonald. I think you know Billy.
Billy was on the board of Henry Griffiths, and we were – and you got it. I mean, so here we are. Billy, I used to sit in meetings when I was a regional training director for Henry Griffiths, and Billy was on the board, and we'd discuss, and we'd have our sales meetings, and Billy was always there. What a great guy Billy was. And another great guy to get on the show, by the way. But
you know, now that you mention it, my mentors have been pretty strong personalities.
Yep.
Dr. Tomasi, when he wants to be, can be an intellectual bully and just leave you crying on the floor. He can also go the other way, tell you some Monty Python stuff, and you'd be laughing so hard you're laying on the floor.
Well,
Billy McDonald was, not a tall man.
No, not at all.
5'6", maybe?
Yep.
5'6"?
Yep.
But a human dynamo.
Yep.
I mean, when he comes in the door, if people are... he's barking orders, people are writing on yellow pads, and you're assigned to do this, and they're assigned, and off he'd go. And great opportunity, again, got to be around some great teachers. And so, Chuck Hogan, TJ Tomasi,
Randy
Henry.
From
there you meet Mike Adams, you meet blah, blah, blah. You can get magazine articles published because you have some sort of pedigree now.
Exactly.
And so I just sucked as much of the intelligence of these guys as I could. And, you know, I tried to parlay that into millions, and I came up a little short.
Yeah. Well, you know, the interesting thing is that we really, I mean, nowadays the kids that want to teach, they go to the big name schools, the Harmon schools and Haney's and Ledbetter's, and they can mentor and create their own careers off that. But back in the day, there weren't that many organized programs like that. You know, I know Toski and Flicks were doing the Golf Digest schools, and I went and attended, and I paid money to go learn from people. And then I was fortunate enough to get involved in the Henry Griffiths family of some of the most amazing teachers and individual. Chuck was part of it. Billy was part of it. You got involved and became a fitter through Billy. And you know, just if you can just imagine the people. I mean, Jimmy Ballard was a big advocate of what we did. And we, this is at a time when no one.
Now you get it from Jimmy, and then you give it to me.
Yeah.
And I give it to another guy. And pretty soon they forgot it was Jimmy Ballard who started.
Yeah. And so.
And that last guy thinks he invented it.
Exactly. And then, you know, video came along, and we thought this was going to revolutionize teaching, and it really didn't do a whole lot. I mean, it was, we later, Randy did some work with MIT, and they discovered that the video was one of the least effective methods for teaching golf, and which is kind of interesting because I think now it's so prevalent. I mean, the technology has gotten so crazy. I mean, we just taught motion and balance and put the right golf club in your hand. And so you get to Birmingham, you're working at one of Chuck's schools, you meet Billy, you're introduced to Henry Griffiths, and then I want to get to your 3 seconds to better golf, which was...
All right, that's the next stop on the
exactly.
On the train anyway.
So let's go from...
Birmingham working with Billy.
Yep.
Great guy. I wasn't earning the kind of money that we all thought I could make it down there.
Mm-hmm.
And I met a guy, Mark Osborne, who owns two golf courses in Destin, Florida. He's got Emerald Bay and Seascape, both fantastic facilities. And Mark's a great guy. All his staff were great people. Mark said, why don't you come on down here to Destin and you can do your own golf school down here.
Gotcha.
I said, all right, great. And I left Mr. McDonald, and I don't think I gave the notice that I should have. And Billy, if you're listening, I'm sorry. I was still that punk back then, but any slights you may have felt from me, I'm sorry.
Well, the thing is, Mike, I mean, it was, you know, you were just on your journey, and people pass through all the time. I mean, I've had other instructors that I've mentored, and when Dalton and I were doing the golf schools, we had people kind of come and go, and it's just everybody's on their own journey, and it's just interesting how many different paths cross in the industry. So this is in the 1990s now. We're now getting up into the early 1990s.
Right. And you know, when I went down there to Florida to do these golf schools at Emerald Bay Golf Club, they put me up in one of the condos on Seascape Golf Course and covered that expense. And so I had a little office, and I started outlining the Emerald Bay Golf Academy. And so I get all that ready, and I have a brochure designed, and I have this, and I have that, and this. We need to do this. We need to buy ads here. So I had a marketing budget. I had all that. And so I sat down with David Fleischer, Mark's top guy, and he said, all right, looking through your stuff on the golf school looks fantastic. I said, well, what's it going to be? And he goes, all right, well, let's just go ahead and get started with it. I said, yeah, let's do it. He goes, okay. I'm going to need a check for about $5,000 to get started. He goes, what? I said, that's a start, but it's going to add up to more than that. Oh, well, Mark was under the understanding he'd come down here and he'd pay everything. I said, well, we should have had a longer conversation. I'm broke. And so I ended up becoming the head golf professional at Seascape and teaching, doing schools. But that's when I met Amy Grant and her entire family. Wonderful people. They all own condos down there on Seascape. And I started teaching, I think it was Gloria Grant first, Amy's mother, and then Dr. Grant, Amy's father, and then Amy insisted, or Gloria insisted that Amy come take lessons with me. And she came out, she didn't want to do it, you know. She knows everybody in Nashville and plays at the golf club of Tennessee. She doesn't need a Mike Wine in her life. But boy, did I need her. And so I taught the whole family, and then her father said, you should do a golf video, because sometimes you're kind of funny, and I think some people would like it. I said, okay. I said, I don't have any money to do it. And he said, well, let's raise some. So we took eight of my top students, doctors, lawyers, that kind of stuff, and gave a presentation in about, an hour. I left with $250,000 to play around with.
Seed money.
To me, that was huge back then. And, you know, off the subject a little, I don't know if you're following this Tahatha Gol.
Yes.
Tahatha Gol.
Yes.
It's about a guy who is like a mystic, and he's been to Tibet. It's like a Bill Murray kind of thing.
I'm actually going to do a show with them. So
their ads are everywhere.
Yeah. Well.
And
yeah, they've actually approached me.
But I heard that he raised like $5 or $6 million to get this thing up and going.
Yes.
Ooh, that's a long way from what I did.
Well, but you got to realize
it's
20 years later too. So. Takes a lot more to get yourself marketed. And then with the internet, it's a heck of a lot easier. It's a fascinating process.
Here's the whole problem is when I started doing golf school, there were maybe a handful, 10 of them. And the good ones could afford to run ads in Golf Digest and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
I just had to send mailings out.
Yep.
But at that time, I really thought you could generate a video, create a database, and do golf schools to all the people that liked your video for $250,000 seed money.
Right.
Well, turns out I needed a lot more than that.
Yep.
Unfortunately, I lost my money, my investors' money. That was tough. But in the meantime, I got so much out of it. Benefited a lot from that $250,000, and when I make it big, I'm going to pay those investors back triple. They're wonderful, and I love them all.
Well, the thing about it was this was pioneering. I mean, you did this. You know, the video was called 3 Seconds to Better Golf. My listeners, if you're interested, if you go to YouTube and type it in, there's a small clip from it. You'll see Mike back in his younger days, but you know, and I watched. I was involved with Dalton when he did the number one. His video, yeah, well, he had Trudeau behind him and Trudeau's whole engine, and Trudeau was the king of the info commercials, and we've told that story, at some point the three of us are going to get together and just talk stories about golf and have some fun with it. But you know, for you to produce this video when you did, this was one of the first info commercials on golf, and it led this, it opened so many doors for you. You know, obviously being tied in with Amy and having Amy I believe Amy was one of the people that was filmed in the video.
Oh yeah, she was instrumental. She was my one student. Well, I had a couple pros as students in the video.
Yeah,
Randy McCracken and
yeah.
Kevin Lindsay that are both super golfers. Anyway, I got these people, and Amy is wonderful. She's one of those people, has perfect pitch. She has a great sense of humor. She's super intelligent, super warm and loving, is a wonderful Christian woman. And I'm here. This is a different level than I've ever been at. And through 3 Seconds to Better Golf and Amy Grant, all of a sudden now I'm on national TV on the Golf Channel with Peter Kessler's host.
Yep.
Having dinner with Arnold Palmer at the Bay Room, or at the Arnold Palmer Room at Bay Hill, and I'm on a Learjet to Orlando to do the TV with Amy Grant, riding in the jet, and I go, wow, this is my new life.
Yeah.
Well, in my 15 minutes
of fame.
But yep. when I got on the one and only Learjet ride I've ever taken, we're flying there. I got my buddy Randy and Amy's, you know, writing a song on this Learjet. Well, she said, "What do you think about your first Learjet ride?" And I go, "Well, frankly, I'm unimpressed." She goes, "Why?" I said, "Well, there's no sensation of speed. You don't feel yourself turn." She goes, "Mike, that's kind of the whole point." she said, "I'm able to work here." And she said, "Maybe your first company vehicle should be a corporate biplane.
There you go.
You can set your shoes on fire and wing walk and then dive down."
Exactly. You want to feel the
time. I thought I was going to be there just my whole life and in limos and partying with Vince Gill and Amy Grant. The world just doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
But I got so many opportunities.
Well, and then, you know, you end up working with Tomasi at PGA National, and so how long did you stay in Florida? I mean, I know that you made it on the Golf Channel in the early days. Arnold, obviously, it was Arnold's program. He loved Amy, and you guys through Amy's connection and through her family, you raised the money to do the video. I think it was fascinating because it really just, you know, evolved. The 3 seconds were actually takeaway, top of the swing, and impact, and it left a lot of opportunity for people to take that and put it into their own way. Unfortunately, you realized that without a lot of money to pay for TV advertising, you're basically, you know, it's just like the hammer golf. You're wide awake and can't sleep at 3 a.m. and on ESPN, all of a sudden your info commercial pops up and somebody's buying your video at 4 a.m. And that's kind of...
Well,
you know, and the difference was with Dalton's marketing as opposed to yours, you were doing everything and paying for your own advertising and doing your own sales. It just, you know, it was a totally different ballgame when you have a machine like Trudeau's machine behind you. And of course, I don't think Dalton made that much off of his deal either. So, I mean, Trudeau took most of the money and spent it on advertising and himself. But
yeah, I'm not sure how many of those things actually make money. Even the ones that are on for a long time.
Yeah.
Because we, no matter how we tweaked our ads and used Amy Grant's beautiful face and voice as a sales lever, we lost about $10 for every video we sold.
Yeah.
So it was just a long,
well,
slow
people, I don't
crash.
Think... I don't think people understand how much it costs to just do the video. I mean, and particularly with the people that the team brought in to shoot your video. Trudeau had his own video production team, and he would just send them down to us, and we'd shoot the video in a day or two, and they were done. And, you know, I can't imagine, you know, I know what it cost when we tried to do, Dalton tried to do his airborne overthin. I mean, we were paid $50,000 for one day just to get these people to come down and shoot the show. And then we had to do it again. And I don't think people understand what it costs to get that kind of stuff out there. So Mike, you've had this incredible career. So you're down in Florida, and the video kind of flops. And so what happened, and what led you to where you are today? What have you been up to the last 10 years or so?
Well, the thing I'm most proud of and the best thing I've ever done, I became a father.
There you go.
And I got a son named Tyler, the greatest kid in the world. So he was born in 1996, which is just the time we started work on the video. And so I would go do all these, film shoots and Golf Channel, that kind of stuff, and then go back home and be with my son and his mother. And eventually I said, you know, I can't pursue the goals I've had of being a top golf instructor and spend the time of quality time with my family that I wanted. So I kind of put myself on the back burner. But again, the power of people through Amy Grant and her parents, I got the job as director of instruction at Gaylord Springs Golf Club in Nashville,
awesome.
Part of the Gaylord Hotel group, and it was. So you know, they found me a place to land. If I ever wrote a book, it'd probably be how to live like a golf star on $100,000 a month, or $1,000 a month.
Exactly.
I've never made any real money, and I don't care, because when we end up on that bench at 90 years old on the par 3 watching the kids play, all we've got at that point is our memories. Nothing else matters.
I agree.
And when you think back to what was the best day of my life, it wasn't that day you got a raise at work. It wasn't that day you shot 67 for the first time. It was the people that you played with and the places you've been, the memories you create.
Yeah.
And, this is an hour show. We could go months, you and I and Dalton, and not cover all the great times we've had. And there are a couple little bumps along the way, too.
It's all about relationships in life, Mike. And you hit it on the nail on the head. I mean,
I thought it was about the money, but
yeah,
it wasn't.
Well, I left the golf industry for about 3 years, and it was making more money. And in reality, I wasn't happy. I wasn't teaching. I wasn't giving back. I think God put me on this planet to mentor and teach kids. And I was on the board of junior golf here for years, and we grew it huge. And it was just, and it's odd enough now today, 30 years later, I'm working for some of the kids I used to teach. And it's just a way, you have a passion, we chase that little white ball around, and there's been times in my career when I've made a lot of money, and other times when, people don't understand it. As a golf pro, we're underpaid. I mean, even the top head pro jobs now in these management companies are making 35 to 45 a year. Yeah. And so we have to teach.
Money.
Yep. And right. I figured out early on that I could make more money teaching than I could standing behind the desk when I'm looking at, as a member of the PGA, I'm looking at salaries and things, and I'm thinking, man, the average salary is this for a head pro, and that's at a private club or a high end, and the stress you have to deal with, you don't teach. And I think they pulled the golf pro off the golf course and put him in the office, and the game, the growth of the game slowed down. And so I'm a big proponent.
You're right.
I think it's sad to what happened in the 90s in the boom, and so many golf courses were being built, and there just wasn't.
It was our own fault.
Yeah.
As the PGA, we were at a crossroads.
Yep.
It was okay. Guess who's getting paid the most money in golf? Club managers that come out of the hotel industry.
Yeah.
And they're making $160,000 a year. The golf pro's making 40.
Yeah.
And so, we're having meetings. What shall we do? How do we become the $160,000 guy? Oh, I know. Let's all put on suits and ties and carry briefcases.
Well, here's the thing.
And people think. I said, I'm out on that.
I'm 100%. I want to tell you, as a regional director in Henry Griffiths, I traveled to different golf courses trying to promote teaching programs. There would be a teacher there that really wanted to get involved with us, and we'd put a business plan together to show the golf course how it would benefit them, and we'd go and sit down, and we were sitting down with people who weren't golfers, who were running these companies or management companies, and they would look at me literally twice. I would hear the same statement. Well, teaching just isn't a line item in our budget. And I'm thinking, do you know that by growing the game, that by bringing students in, you're going to sell driving range balls, you're going to sell golf equipment, you're going to sell food and beverage. And how can you not look at having a thriving golf instructional program at your facility? How can you not realize how that's going to benefit you? And I got so frustrated with the way the industry was going back then, because fewer people are playing golf today. And it was, I think the trend is changing now, thank goodness. But, I just couldn't believe. I mean, how can you not grow your facility's business by bringing in the kids that come in? The parents will sit there and spend money while the kids are taking lessons. I mean, junior programs, instructional programs. And it just was left by the wayside for so long. And again, we're kind of running out of time, Mike, and I'm sure we'll have you back on again, and We'll talk. We'll just have a fun day, the three of us, us old school guys that have kind of traveled the same path. And I really appreciate you coming on and just kind of telling your story. I don't think people really realize what goes on in the golf business. And you see these very successful golf pros like Ledbetter and Harmon, and they've developed and marketed themselves. But they all started out with just got that one lucky break, got that one pro that gave them a reputation, and they built on it and built on it. But there's so many instructors like us out there that have worked with so many great people and helped. And just nobody knows about us because we never really got the opportunity to market ourselves correctly, or we never got that one kid that turned out to be number one on the money list or whatever.
You think about it, all these 27,000 pros are trying to figure out a way to elevate themselves above the others as teachers. And yeah, we're a brotherhood, but we're also competitors.
Yep.
And it's, I got golf pro guys that want to run me off their facility. I got those that beg me to come. And it's like you said, it's about relationships and how you approach the people. But there is a fear that golf is going to collapse. And if there is a saving group, it's going to be your teachers.
I think so, too. And so I want to thank you for coming on the show. We're out of time, Mike, and we'll do this again. And we may talk a little bit more. I think next time we get on, we're going to talk a little bit more about golf instruction. I think that the audience enjoys that. But, now we've got a background. People know who you are that listen to the show. And I think we can kind of put a different spin on instruction. And, we've seen it go from when we were sitting just digging it out of the dirt back in the 70s and early 80s to a fascinating industry now golf instruction has become, with all the technology and the biomechanics. And I think one of the things that we believe, I know you believe it, is that if we can get it simple again, if we can make it just more of a concept of emotion and start coaching them and helping our students as we learn from them get better, I think the game is in pretty good hands. And I'm not going to beat up all these new young technical instructors, but I think too much emphasis is being put on the golf pro swing today. And I think our background allows us to give a different look at it. So I want to again thank you, Mike, for coming on. It's a great show. I hope you stay healthy, and we'll be in touch very soon, man. Thanks a bunch.
Look, thank you, and I want to tell you this. You made an old man feel young again. It's like getting in a hot tub time machine going back to 1979. And I've been ill, and today I feel like I'm still a golf pro. And I thank you very much.
And I look forward to working with you in some of our schools upcoming, and we'll be in touch soon. Thanks, Mike.
Thank you, sir.
Well, folks, it's time to say goodbye to this episode of Fairways and Greens. Hope you enjoyed the show. And if you would like to subscribe to the show, just head over to golfcoachpodcast.com. That's www.golfcoachpodcast.com. And don't forget to reach out with your questions and your input on the show to info@golfcoachpodcast.com. So reach out with your questions and anything you'd like to add or any suggestion on future shows to info@golfcoachpodcast.com. And you can find me, the Vegas Golf Coach, and a link to my blogs, coaching centers, and programs at www.vegasgolfcoach.com. That's www.vegasgolfcoach.com. So goodbye for now, and here's to finding your share of fairways and greens in your journey through life and golf.
This podcast was a presentation of LightUpMedia.fm.